Let's see how down Sea Red Fred is.
Oh, boy.
You've come out of here. Hey, congratulations on the TV gig the other day, by the way.
Yeah, I appreciate that, brother. It would not have happened if it wasn't for you two gentlemen. So thank you for that. Hey, I got to say something. I'm very angry, but I do want to step back for a second. I'm sick of this "why are you watching" movement and all this apathy. I watch because I'm a fan. I don't up in a sweater when we're only winning 6 titles. Why is no other team in this city held to the same standard? I'm watching the next 2 Bears games. They haven't won a playoff game since 2011. So don't ask me why am I watching. If you don't want to watch, that's fine. What kind of fan watches only when things are good? I don't care if it's a friendship, a marriage, a job. Who are you if you only participate when things are good?
Well, I think Sylvia and I have both agreed. Listen, if you want to take your family to a Bulls game and enjoy it with your family, I'm not going to rip you for doing that.
Nor will
That's
I.
That's exactly right. Yeah.
Or if you decide that your stance as a diehard fan is you're not going to give them any of your money, I'm not going to tell you that you're wrong for doing that either. I think it's up to the individual how you want to spend your discretionary income and how you want to go about being a fan.
That's exactly right, Tom. So I'm still going, and anybody who tells me why am I watching, pound sand. I'm still supporting the team. That said, I'm furious. I'd argue every stinking player on this roster outside of Valentine, Gafford, and Dunn have fallen short of expectations. Valentine spent had a DNP for the first 14 of 17 games. How can I have any faith in the head coach with that, considering how good he's played, since he actually got into the rotation?
I've asked you this before. How could you have any faith in the front office evaluating anyone if they deemed that guy the worthy coach?
Well, you got me on that one. I do have faith in their draft. I do believe that the 777, I do believe that Lauri Markkanen isn't a poor man's version of Cameron Bairstow. I do believe he has talent. I do believe in Wendell Carter Jr. I mean, Tommy, you talked Wendell Carter Jr. at Duke was a fantastic passer. He shot 41% from three.
So Fred, that's why I watch the games, and I never see Wendell out to make a shot outside the paint because I don't think that they're developing him.
You're right. He doesn't even look for a shot. No. So I don't think the problem has been the drafting and the talent bringing it in. I think the record is not commensurate with the talent. The problem has been our head coach, and I agree 100% with Tom. Doug Collins is a great coach. Let's put Doug in. Or, you know, even better, how about Pat Stepniak come in and coach? I'd like to see one of those two guys come in because I don't have any faith in Jim Boylan's ability to evaluate the talent on a roster or to call a timeout when it's
appropriate. Here's your problem. You're going to go through another year where these guys are in their prime development years. And you've got a young guy in Coby White that I think a lot of people are excited about who isn't developing either. You go through another season where none of these guys are developed and you're on that treadmill to hell.
Right.
You're right, but stay true. I still believe, not right now, but eventually.
Fred, thanks.
All right, guys.
Hi, this is Neil Buck, and you're listening to Frick on the Chicago Bullseye.
Hello, this is Nate Friedel, and you're listening to Frick on the Chicago Bullseye. Hi, this is Chuck Swirsky, and you're listening to Fred on the Chicago Bullseye.
I'm Bob Love of the Chicago Bulls, and you listen to Freddie.
Hello again, everybody. Welcome to another exciting edition of Chicago Bullseye. And boy, oh boy, in a season of disappointing losses, last night really took the cake. The Bulls blew a massive 26-point lead and lost 109-106 to the Oklahoma City Thunder. One of the worst losses I've ever seen for a Bulls team. You know, where do you begin to describe it? I really want to first say that loss really hid two incredible performances for the Bulls. One on the offensive side of the ball, Zach LaVine with a 39-point effort, 15-25 from the field. He didn't shoot great from three, only 3 of 11, but 6 for 6 from the line, 34 minutes, 39 points. Just a stellar effort from Zach, and he was a +3 for the night. I thought he was absolutely fantastic for the vast majority of the game. Some of his decision-making down the stretch, again, the only thing I can say is when Zach goes to the hero ball route, the offense, I think, has a tendency to stagnate. I just think he's so much better when he's looking to facilitate for others and then also pick his spots to score. And I thought the fourth was a little bit too much. I'll try to win this for us. And but you know what? No one else was really stepping up. So I guess Zach, in big picture, it's hard to make any critiques about a guy who put up 39 points. Without him, we would have lost the game by significantly more. Also, Chris Dunn, who was 2 for 3 from the field, offensively didn't do much. But in 30 minutes, I thought he was absolutely fantastic on the defensive end. Chris Paul could do nothing when he was one-on-one against him. Almost all his points were off of pick and roll when Chris Dunn was out of the game. For some unknown reason, he only played 30 minutes, and that's a game to me. When Chris Paul has 5 of 5 from the three-point line in the fourth quarter and scores 19 of his 30 points, you better have Chris Dunn in for almost the entire quarter, and he didn't. Another failure from our head coach because his son, Ryan A., couldn't guard him, couldn't come close to guarding him, and no one else really on the team had a chance. I thought that was the whole key part of the game. There was some unbelievably bad officiating, too. So I don't want to hear the lecture about, you know, the Bulls blew it. Yes, they blew it, but it was definitely helped. When you blow a 26-point lead, it's not all on a team usually. There's usually a little bit of help from the Zebras, and that was absolutely the case yesterday. Three of the most egregious, atrocious calls I've ever seen in a basketball game. They called a foul on Denzel Valentine, his fifth foul, where he wasn't even involved with the play. Inexcusable poor call that handed some points to Oklahoma City. Another call on Wendell Carter Jr. in a jump ball situation when it was clear Steven Adams was the person guilty of the foul. And then also there were two other, I thought, really poor calls. There was a foul on Zach LaVine that wasn't called on a three-point attempt. Dennis Schroeder, I believe, was the one who got him on that play. That was with about 30 seconds left, and the league admitted that was a missed call. And I thought the worst was the last possession in tie game. Chris Paul, excellent defense by Chris Dunn, excellent defense by Wendell Carter Jr., and the refs award the ball to Oklahoma City after Chris Paul basically travels, does a full-fledged dive, and barely gains possession of the ball, and they grant him a timeout. Absolutely ridiculous. In any other sport, superstars in our leagues aren't given preferential treatment. In baseball, Chris Bryant doesn't have a different strike zone than any other superstar. And, you know, Tom Brady doesn't get beneficial calls on pass interference plays. For some reason, the NBA does this. I never understood why, and I think it's a big reason why ratings are down. Who knows why ratings are down, but it's a big problem with the league, and it always has been that certain players are called differently than others. You can't tell me if Chris Dunn made the exact same play that Chris Paul did to end that game, that the result would have been drastically different call. It would have been a travel on Chris Dunn. But whatever, and we can all act like the Bulls, you know, definitely the Bulls lost the game. I'm not saying it was the officials' fault. The officials didn't help. You could say it's both things can be true. It was an absolutely ridiculously officiated game. End of story. Don't really want to talk much more about it. It's nauseating where this team is at. The Bulls should be significantly better than 10-19. Their record is not commensurate with the talent. I could say this a thousand times until I'm blue in the face, but it's absolutely true. The Bulls should have a much better record. They should be much closer to 500. When you look, they've lost a 26-point lead against Oklahoma City, a 19-point lead against the Lakers. They lost an 18-point lead against the Knicks, 10-point lead against the Cavs, 10-point lead against Charlotte. I could go on and on. It's just inexcusable, and it keeps on happening. And a lot of it has to be pointed at the head coach. But, you know, nothing's going to change, it appears, for at least this season. And, we're all going to have to just live with it. I still believe the Bulls can get better. I still believe the Bulls will be better. But this is definitely a very disappointing loss. And this is very difficult times when you look at the 73 points they scored against Charlotte. The great victory against the Clippers. But to lose a game like it could have been just... should have been such a much better experience. Let's just put that mildly. I'm so irritated with the loss still that I can't even talk about my great experience at Bulls Outsiders on Saturday. I'm going to save that for another show. What you're about to hear now is an interview with the great John Watson, who's the brother of Big Dave Watson. I met John earlier this year at, I think it was a draft party. I talked with him, and I was really struck about his intelligence and how enjoyable he was to talk to, just like his brother Dave. He's a big DePaul fan, and I've always been a huge DePaul fan. And I said, I have to have this guy on the show. So I actually recorded twice with John. What you're about to hear is the most recent one, talking about the turnaround of DePaul. But we also recorded one in the summer that's a little bit more timeless that I'm going to probably post around Christmas. It's a two-part episode, one with John and one with, I'm going to hopefully have a recording with our friend Tim Gallagher, the basketball historian, all on DePaul basketball, the history of DePaul basketball, and how big it was in the city. For most of you who are listening to this, don't realize how big DePaul basketball was. So I hope you enjoy this. Big Dave's brother, John Watson, and I get into not only DePaul basketball, we do talk a little bit about the beloved Bulls. So please shoot me an email at chicagobullseye@gmail.com. Follow me on Twitter at CBEFred, at CBEFred. I hope you enjoy and have a great evening. Hello again, everybody. Welcome to another exciting edition of the Chicago Bullseye. We have a very special guest today, John Watson, legendary brother of Big Dave Watson, on the line. John is a DePaul expert and a Bulls expert, so it's great to talk to you. How you doing?
I'm great, Fred. How are you?
I've been better after witnessing another Bulls loss in a season filled with epic meltdowns and disappointing losses. This one really takes the cake. How insane and maddening is it that Gafford and Valentine sat on the bench for a month, and we had to put up with Luke Kornet and his other favorite sons, Ryan A., and you know, and Shaq Harrison to a certain degree, and these two guys who are contributing so much sat and rotted on the bench while this coach was too stupid to realize their value to the team. I don't know. Do you agree or disagree?
I almost forgot Denzel Valentine was on the team.
believe me, I didn't, because I've been talking about this guy for years. Like, I think he's one of the most underrated players I've ever seen in a Bulls uniform. And the fact, offensively, I really think he has very few faults. He can handle the ball extremely well. He can pass, and he can shoot. And he can rebound. What else do you want? You know, defensively, he's got some deficiencies that are covered up, I feel, a lot by his length. It's just inexcusable that he's just been sitting on the bench and rotting. And both these guys proved it for when they went to Windy City. They could have been, you know, they could have gone there and performed poorly and pouted. Instead, they excelled there, and they still haven't been playing. It's just a sign our head coach has no idea what he's doing.
Yeah, I call him the gym teacher. So that gym, you know, all right, guys, let's go.
I agree, man. He's terrible. Outside of Boylan, which is obviously an issue, what do you think the biggest issue has been with this team?
Oh, first of all, I don't think we have I don't think our stars have enough toughness. And I'm specifically talking about Markkanen and LaVine. Those guys, they're just a little too soft. I just think that he and LaVine, if they're going to be our two lead dogs, they've got to act like dogs, and right now they're not acting like it. I think that's the big. And the other thing, Fred, is that we really don't have any real veterans. You know, the leader of our team is basically 20 years old. You know, but you know, you got Thaddeus Young, but we need, you know, another one of those good wily veterans that understand how to win and understand how to prepare to win. And I think we're missing that.
I agree 100%. I really thought Thad Young would bring that, and he's been a disappointment to me. I expected a lot more from him. I don't know if it's his role that Boylan's given him, if it's more Boylan's fault, but I just expected more from Thad, and I'm sure he, you know, probably behind the scenes he's done a good job. But I agree 100%. We need a guy who's a vet, who's really kind of like a leader of the team, who's one of the top four or five players, and Sato's too quiet to be that guy. You know,
right.
You're right. When you say, are you referring to Wendell Carter Jr. as a leader of the team? Because that's how I kind of feel the leader is.
Yes.
Yes, I agree.
Yeah.
I agree.
He's the only one that acts like the leader on that team to me.
Yeah, you bring up a lot of good points. LaVine, you know, obviously against Charlotte, great game there. 49 points won us that game. But I was going in at the end of this game with another really poor decision in crunch time. He's had a lot of those opportunities. And his end-of-game decision-making, Golden State, you know, even a Raptors to a certain extent is highly questionable.
Yeah, and when he scored those 49 points, it was right after Boylan called him out, you know, by sitting him on the bench.
Yeah.
You know, he doesn't seem to have that dog, that toughness that, hey, I'm the man, you know, everybody get on my shoulder, we're going home. You know, he's just not that guy. You know, he'll score, he'll get you 20 points, but that's about it. It's kind of the most, they usually seem to be a very significant, very insignificant 20 points.
Agreed.
It's like you look up and you say, wow, he had 22 points? Wow.
Yep. Agree 100%. I'm going to get nauseous if we keep on talking about the Bulls. So we got to talk about something that's actually a positive light on the basketball horizon. And just a little background for people who aren't aware of this. John and I recorded, God, it had to be July or maybe August, a show on DePaul basketball. And I love it so much that I kind of saved. I have a couple shows that are saved for when I don't do a show that's a little bit timeless. And it's kind of more on the history of DePaul and their basketball team. And at the end of it, you know, John had predicted that DePaul is going to be significantly better. And I remember I kind of thought, you know, I'd be shocked if they're 500. And oh my gosh, John, were you right on that prediction? Unbelievable how this team has started out. Let's get into some DePaul basketball talk. What has caused this turnaround and relatively quick turnaround?
You know, in terms of the turnaround, you have a couple of factors in the turnaround. One is our leading scorer, Paul Reed. Each year he's been there has continued to grow by leaps and bounds. And this year he's leading us in scoring. He's leading us in rebounds. He's leading us in blocks. You know, I call him PMD, you know, the poor man's Kevin Durant. He's kind of built like Durant. He doesn't have that. He doesn't have the pull-up jumper like Durant does, but everything else he can pretty much do. And that's a big play. But the other reason is Charlie Moore. You know, he's a former Mr. Basketball in Illinois, went to Morgan Park. He's a transfer. He went to Cal first, and then he went to Kansas, and right, finally got here with the medical red shirt. I guess his father's really ill. NCAA granted him the waiver, and he is the engine. I mean, we haven't had point guard play like that in a long time. And so with him at the point, and you got a guy like Paul Reed, then you've got another Mr. Basketball who was from Michigan, from the Detroit area, Romeo Weems, and he's a freshman that doesn't play like a freshman. And then our other transfer, Jalen Coleman-Lance from Illinois, he was hurt most of last year. This year, he's looking like the outside shooting threat that we all expected him to be. I mean, he's played really well. So we've got better players. And I think most importantly, Fred, we have an identity now. You know, we know who we are. We are a defensive, grimy, scrappy team. Mm-hmm. You know, that sounds like a Chicago team, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. What do you think Lato now is – How has it been internally viewed about his return and when he was hired from people in the know at DePaul? I mean, were you excited when you heard he was coming back? What was your feeling on him as a head coach?
I didn't want him to leave. I thought he left prematurely the first time. I thought he had done a really nice job, and I was looking forward to him being with DePaul for a long time. I will admit that I was shocked when I heard he was being brought back, but... And there were many in the DePaul basketball community that weren't real excited about Lato coming back. It was kind of like they kind of looked at him as a retread, you know, like, hey, we got to do something new. We got to do something different. Mm-hmm. But I maintain that, I mean, who else really wanted the job?
You know?
It's not like, you know, it's not like we're Duke or Kentucky, you know. And I like the fact that Lato actually wanted to come back. I think, they were talking about Bobby Hurley, but I didn't see Bobby Hurley really meshing with the Chicago, you know, AAU basketball scene. He's kind of a stubborn guy.
Yes, agreed.
He's at New York, and, you know, that doesn't always play well in Chicago. You know, we could care less about New York. And then they were thinking about Bryce Drew from Valparaiso. I wasn't real excited about that either. So I thought that Lato was, you know, I didn't think he was the greatest pick at the time, mm-hmm, just given what we were going through. But once I found out that he was going to be there, I'm thinking, hey, you know what? I think this is going to work out because he wants to be here and he understands DePaul. And that's essentially how it's – and when he was here the last time, that was the last time we actually had some success.
Exactly. What is the ceiling on this team? Do you feel this is a team that can – make noise in the tournament? I mean, assuming they make the tournament, it'd take a massive collapse for them not to make the tournament. The first team since what year? It's been forever since DePaul's been in the NCAA tournament.
Well, since Lato was here back, I'm losing my numbers. Somewhere in that area, 05, 6, 7.
So over a decade. And do you think they have the ability to maybe make a Loyola type of run?
I don't know about a Loyola run because that was Final Four. Because the thing that we are lacking, at least at this point in the season, is depth. Mm-hmm. That's one of the reasons that we lost yesterday. You know, our guys are gassed. We have a defensive identity, and they're giving their all on defense, but it's catching up with them on the offensive end.
Mm-hmm.
because we don't have a lot of, depth. And so, and the other thing is we don't have a lot of bulk either. Our guys are very athletic, you know, they're you know, kind of slender in most cases, but you know, we don't have that, you know, as much strength as some of the other teams that normally make it to the tournament do. But I think we can certainly make it to the tournament. I wouldn't be surprised if we do. There's no question about that. If we don't, it's because we're in a very tough conference. You know, the Big East is a war every single night. There are no easy games and there are no gimmies. And so, but I think if we can at least split in the Big East and go into tournament and go into conference play with, you know, right now we're 9-1. You know, if we can go in 12-1 and then split 9-9, I think we're in the tournament.
No doubt. And so you feel though this team could potentially make a run, but not a Final Four run.
Well, I'm
never know.
I'm a homer, so I'm going to always. You know, I'm kind of like you. You know, I'm going to always think we're going to win. But realistically, it would be tough to make that kind of run based on what we've got to deal with. But not saying it can't happen.
Can they win the Big East? Is that possible? Who is their biggest competition, do you feel, to win the Big East?
Villanova. It always starts with Villanova.
Yep.
You know, so they, you know, Villanova, as you know, won two NCAA championships the last few years. You've got Marquette, which is always a tough out, which is our rival. They've got Marcus Howard, who seems to, I mean, every time I look up, he's scoring 35 or 40 points. And then you have, you know, then you've got, you know, those teams that are, you always seem to be tough, you know, Providence, Seton Hall, is also a good team. You know, Georgetown will sneak up on you. Butler. I mean, Creighton. I mean, there are just no easy days in that conference. I mean, it's a tough game every night.
Yeah. So it's going to be difficult. It has, do you feel any of the guys on this team have a professional NBA career ahead of them?
Oh, without a doubt. Paul Reed, for sure. I mean, guy's 6'9", you know, 220. You know, he's averaging, like, you know, 15 points, 11 blocks. Excuse me, 11 rebounds, and I think he's 3 or 4 blocks. I think he's an NBA player. He may be an NBA player this year. I mean, he's that good. Mm-hmm. I also think Romeo Weems, who's a freshman, he was Mr. Basketball in Detroit. I referenced him earlier. Mm-hmm. I see him. He looks like an NBA player to me. Charlie Moore, our spark plug, he's the guy that makes it all go. You know, he's a little small, but I wouldn't be surprised if he made it either. He may not be a starter. Get drafted.
Yeah.
But I think he'll make someone's team.
It's unbelievable how this organization, how the Paul basketball has really just come to the forefront so quickly. It's so exciting to see.
It's about time, Fred. I've been suffering a long time.
Tell the listeners what you recommend as far as games, like getting down there. Do you recommend the whole experience? Any suggestions too for the people who have not gone to the ball game? You know why they should go.
You know, we played Texas Tech right the Tuesday before Thanksgiving,
mm-hmm.
and that was an unbelievable game. I mean, it was an unbelievable game. It was an unbelievable atmosphere. And it really shows what happens when Chicago's excited about a basketball team. The atmosphere was just absolutely unbelievable. The Wintrust Arena is great. There are no bad seats in the place. The sight lines are awesome. The building is built for basketball. It's built for basketball. And it's a great experience. DePaul's band is a lot of fun. And the team, again, looks like a Chicago team. They're gritty. They play defense. They hustle. They give it their all. And more people are starting to come. I'm getting more and more people calling me about DePaul than has happened at least in the last 12 or 13 years.
That's great to hear.
Awesome atmosphere.
I do want to go back to the Bulls before we wrap this up. Do you think the team is going to make the playoffs, number one and number two? I'd like your take on what needs to be done.
Yeah, I don't see the playoffs at all. I just don't see it unless something drastic happens. I don't think we have the right coach. I don't think we have the right combination of players. I don't think we're playing the guys that should be playing. And I don't think we have a lot of toughness. And you're just not going to win in the NBA being soft.
Mm-hmm.
And right now we are soft. We're soft as butter right now. Mm-hmm. And it's quite frankly, it's embarrassing. I mean, this is Chicago. If anything, we should wake up with a team that has some heart. I just don't see that right now. I see talent, but I don't see heart.
Yeah.
And you got to have both.
I think you see that reflected in the attendance. It's just people are just so disgusted with this team. And what I find frustrating is I really feel like the core, though, like a Wendell Carter Jr. and a Kobe White, I really think there's something here. You know, it's just probably not going to be realized with this current front office and head coach. And I think we're near the end now. I mean, if it keeps on going down this path, I don't see them here next year.
Yeah, well, I've thought that for a number of years, and that hasn't happened. So, you know, who knows? But, I mean, our personnel groupings don't seem to make any sense to me. You know, I mean, I just, for the life of me, I can't understand why Daniel Gafford doesn't play more. Mm-hmm. I don't understand why Kobe White's not starting. I don't understand, Valentine languishing on the bench. I don't understand why the coach can, you know, take a stand and sit Zach LaVine and try to send a message, but then that's it. It's like, okay, you know, we gave you, we punished you because you're not responding as the leader, but then you continue the same behavior and you're okay with that.
Yeah.
And Lauri Markkanen, I mean, he's got so much talent, but he's soft. Nobody knows it.
He doesn't have the, it's just hard to describe what it is. It's just that toughness or desire to scrap. I don't think he has it innately in him.
And the bad thing about it, Fred, is he basically has regressed, you know, aside from just being soft. I mean, he's not the same player he was,
no doubt,
you know, a year or two ago.
Yeah, he's definitely improved recently. He's shot it better. To me, that's where it all starts with him, is shooting it. But concur, he's just he didn't take the steps that I wanted to see in year three. And it's, I was hoping I think he has the ability or talent to be a top, you know, 15 player. He really does. If you can hit the three at 6'10", you can get your shot off anywhere. It's just, he doesn't have what, I want the ball, get me the ball, I'm going to win this game.
Exactly.
You know.
That's exactly what he does not have. But that regression, however, is coaching. A lot of that's coaching, in my opinion.
Agreed.
You know, I personally think they should take LaVine and Lauri Markkanen and drop them off over on the west side in K-Town somewhere at the basketball court. And tell them to find their way home.
Maybe one day they'll get back to the UC.
You know, Fred, go over there and get your feelings hurt by the guy that's standing, you know, standing over there, 38 years old, smoking a cigarette, drinking a beer, and has on, you know, jeans and gym shoes, and he comes over and he puts 40 on you. You know, and talks about you the entire time. That's the kind of basketball LaVine and Markkanen need to get used to.
Agreed. Two Suburbanite, both of them. It's now.
Hey, I'm happy. I'm happy to give them a ride there.
I love it. I love it, John. Hey, man, thanks so much for joining the Bullseye. I can't wait to have you on again. Let's definitely do this again before the tournament, and hope maybe even before that, and keep up on DePaul, because, you know, I am excited, and I remember those days of Ray Meyer and even early days of Joey Meyer when the team was Dallas Comegys and was always competitive. I love DePaul basketball, and I'm really excited that they're back.
Yeah, I am super duper excited. I mean, I look at the schedule every day, hoping that the days will come quicker when there's a game.
Yeah.
So
yep.
This is wonderful. Look forward to it, Fred. It's always fun to be on with you. I really respect your knowledge and your loyalty, shall we say, to the Chicago Bulls.
Thanks. That loyalty is sometimes difficult, right? But you got to go through the dark times and tough times to get to the light. And I'm hoping there's a light. I'm hoping there's a light at the end of this tunnel instead of a tunnel at the end of the light. But we'll see. You know, I think they can turn it around in a few years, but it's not going to be under this guy.
I agree. There has to be some changes, and we need a different combination of personnel. We need some heart.
Agree 100%. John, you're the best. Talk to you again soon, bud.
Thanks again. I really appreciate it, Fred.
Talk to you later.